Welcome to the Library of Dharma Talks from Boundless Refuge. To learn more, visit boundlessness.org. May you be well, safe, happy, and peaceful.
Good evening. With Andreessen, debriefing the meetings, processing the meetings that I had with some of you today, and and after that was, after we ran out of time for that, I said, well, at least it's not boring. It's rich. It's rich. I can feel in my body there's a sense of activation of, like, I think compassion. This there's a sense of energy, but also feeling the pain, real pain of some of the struggles that move through some hearts here sometimes. All our hearts at various points, and also big mudita. There's some real insight and balance and compassion moving through some people I met with today too, and that was inspiring, and all the more inspiring because it wasn't always that way for them. It's a lot, and it's rich, and gives me faith in this process, and renews my faith in this practice, in this process, and wherever you find yourself, to really, not in some precious way, but overly precious way, but hold with a kind of trust, a reverence, respect, what is present, what's moving through. Suzuki Roshi said, our practice is like feeling our way along in the dark. You know, this is a practice of the heart. And our mind is just always trying to figure it out, and kind of has a tendency, and its nature may be, to divide and categorize, and it just can't keep up with our spiritual life. And we have to live with it. So the respect and reverence is for this deeper process, this deeper work of the heart, which is also happening. It's been interesting for me, not as much recently, but a few years ago I explored a lot of work with some psychedelic substances, and it was really interesting because it's like they just brought me from the world of my head into the world of my heart. And seeing, oh, this is going on all the time. This, you know, to bring that into the foreground, I could see how it was working all the time. So even if we can't see it, though, most of the time, we can feel it, we can intuit it, we can trust it. At least hold space for something deeper. I read a story from my first teacher, Gil, this evening, that just a little metaphor of spiritual practices, rowing you know, getting in a boat and rowing across a body of water, lake, say. And, you know, he said, you know, for some people, the lake is calm and it's shining and they just cruise right across. And he said, then they may like congratulate themselves that they've, you know, they're so skilled. They think they're, oh, I'm so skilled. And then for someone else, they may meet big storms. And every oar stroke is a struggle, and it often doesn't work. So, but actually, it's working, because what we're really learning is our qualities of how we are. And so that person might eventually get across and then think, I'm you know, real drag. But they've actually learned way more in the process that helps themselves and also able to help others. He was also saying in this essay something quite beautiful, that Buddhism is both a realistic practice and an optimistic practice. And if we only have a realistic practice, if we're only on the side of realism, we fall into despair. It's just struck by the violence and pain in this, in our life and in the world at times. But if we only have optimism, it's like... he said it's unmoored from the ground of spiritual life. So it's both realistic and optimistic. This first of four noble truths, the core Buddhist teaching of the Buddha, the core of the whole thing, the four noble truths, this first truth is that there is dukkha, or there is suffering. The great teacher Ajahn Sumedho would begin every one of his Dharma talks for 50 years saying, "Welcome, brothers and sisters, in old age, sickness, and death." Now, this is what we're, this whole practice is coming to terms with this on a deep level. The story coming into my mind now is from the, you know, Pali Canon. A woman who loses her child. Her child dies and she goes insane. And she won't let go of the child either. People are saying, you know, you're like, we need to just do burial and stuff. And she's holding on to this baby and has passed away and is just maddened with, she goes crazy and encounters the Buddha. And because she thinks, she's heard that he's quite powerful, and can you bring back my child? And he says, yeah, I can bring back your child. But the way you can do that is for this spell. She bear in mind, she had gone crazy. So this is his way of talking to her. But for this spell to work, you need to go and gather a mustard seed from houses of people in this village who... have not been touched by death, meaning no one in their household has died. And she said, oh, that's easy, I'll go and get these mustard seeds. So she goes around house by house asking, can I have a mustard seed? And they say, of course, of course. She said, well, has anyone in your family died, and they thought, oh no, yeah. So no mustard seed, no mustard seed, no mustard seed. Goes around like this, and finally goes back to the Buddha, couldn't get a mustard seed. But in the process, she realized something, and she came to terms with her grief and opened to dukkha, opened more deeply to suffering, and became more sane from it, healed through that. And there are many stories like that in the Buddha's time and all across the ages of Buddhist practice. This encounter with dukkha, this is the ground of the fertile ground of our practice. And it doesn't lead to despair, because as we encounter it, if we can do it in a way where we're not overwhelmed, it's like the person rowing across the lake. We develop in the storm. We develop patience. We develop our intention, deep intention. We develop gentleness. We develop patience, perseverance, and many other skillful qualities. And at the deepest level, the whole teaching of the Four Noble Truths is that if we can really open to our condition, just as it is, however it is, through that openness we find the goodness of our heart, the radiance of our heart, and a profound freedom and compassion. And it's natural and kind of normal for us. It's part of just kind of our ordinary way is to kind of see our suffering as a problem, be that big suffering or little suffering. It's our mind is in there, seeing problems and trying to solve them and trying to get rid of pain and get pleasure, and it goes on like this. But our heart can learn to meet the suffering and understand it and come to terms with it in a beautiful way. It's not really something we can figure out either. We have to encounter it and open our eyes. They didn't give so many teachings at Zen Center, for better and for worse. But I remember the head of practice there, about once a year, would exclaim in the Zendo, "Open your eyes." Which he meant, not just literally. And I don't know if anyone understood, but I appreciated it. I think other people did too. Open your eyes. So I really have come over the course of my life and practice to actually, my little secret is that I actually love my itself. And I do. And meaning I love my myself just and my life just as it is. And sometimes I'm suffering a lot and having some difficulty. Sometimes I'm enjoying myself, and sometimes I'm enjoying myself too much. And I enjoy it all. I'm good with that. But it said this practice goes against the stream. Sometimes we talk about entering the stream, which is a different metaphor, but there's also the metaphor of going against the stream. So it's with this idea that the usual tendency of our mind and of society is to kind of ignore suffering, or try to control it, or try to push it aside, or otherwise avoid it. And our practice is to meet it. Our practice is to meet it uprightly. Sometimes people say, I feel like your Dharma talks are like you're talking just to me. And we are actually all in this predicament. So there is suffering. And then there's this extra suffering, this what blocks the luminosity of our heart, of our wisdom, of our love, is resisting it, and is anything that's not really opening to it, really meeting it. When we meet it, which is the second noble truth, when we let go of not meeting it and meet it, when we come to the meeting, we realize the third noble truth of this freedom from suffering. And then the fourth noble truth, that there's a path, there is a way to cultivate this, to mature in this, to integrate it and extend it. And that snap means I have to go to my other meeting. And I've searched the whole world for some way or some person who can help me cut back on my cheese consumption. And I'm still trying. And that's what my meeting's about. So wish me luck, and then tonight we'll take the, at chanting time, we'll be a little more chanting, because today's the strawberry moon, which means that it's the end of spring and the beginning of summer. And so at the full moon, we'll reaffirm our precepts together in a little ceremony.
If you found this talk helpful, visit boundlessness.org to explore our offerings, and click Give to make a donation. We depend on the generosity of people like you.